Beloved Spirit, may the path we walk be the path of healing. May we embody and extend the healing balm of compassion to our community, to our world, and most importantly, to ourselves. May we envelop one another in such arms of compassion and care. May we understand that we, as Unitarian Universalists and Unitarian Universalism, can be that healing balm, that liberating good news, that well from which we can draw the sustenance necessary to heal ourselves, our communities, and our world. May we now enter into a moment of shared silence. Amen.
I've been a member at UMIN for about 13 years, and I thought I would tell you a little bit about my experience as a member. This is not a history of UMIN or everything I've witnessed here, so please don't be offended if I leave out important events or important people out of this reflection. It's going to be long enough as it is, so you can take a nap now. No, despite my sincere efforts to shorten it. I first started coming here because I really liked the spirituality and serenity that I experienced in the Sunday service. I had never really been part of a religious community, and I know a lot of you won't believe this, but I was kind of shy and self-conscious in groups, so it took me a while to get to know other members. After about a year and a half of coming on Sundays and doing a little volunteer work here and there, at a very difficult time in my life, I noticed that there were paintings hanging in the sanctuary. And I was surprised and impressed to learn that they were painted by other members at a class given by a member named Annette Pate. I had painted a little bit in my early 20s, just a few years before, and I thought I would try. When the first class was over and I drove home through the dark, I felt a lightness of spirit for the first time in months. The combination of the experience of painting and the warmth and friendliness of the class, not to mention the red wine, was a powerful and palpable spiritual force to me. Coming to services on Sunday also became different because I would see my classmates at the service and feel more of a connection than I had before. Over the next few years, I volunteered for a few things here and there and attended some adult RE. One time, I volunteered to give a five-minute homily on grief at a service at UMIN on Yom Kippur. I stood up here for the first time in front of around 50 people and spoke from my heart. Afterwards, one of our members who I admired very much and still do, came up to me and said, "I didn't know you could do that." I didn't either. It was then I decided to try out being a worship associate. Because of that, I got to know a lot more people in the congregation, and I experienced the wonder and connection that I feel every time I get up here and share with all of you. A few years later, I got a call, and you know who you are, Dave Hudson, to ask if I would be willing to join the Board of Trustees as Vice President and after that become President. I was very surprised. I have little patience for meetings, and I really had no idea what the board did. So, of course, I said yes. I thought it could be interesting, and I wanted to give back to UMIN. Also, I kind of like new experiences. Well, I experienced more than I could ever have imagined. My year as Vice President was pretty uneventful. But as many of you may remember, my year as president was just a bit tumultuous and sometimes scary. Thankfully, you all worked so hard and participated in so many special committees and meetings that we got through that year with the health of our community intact. I watched people who had strong opinions let go of the past and become open to change. We grew together and thrived, and we've continued to do that through our interim period. And I can't leave the experience of that year without saying how lucky I am, or lucky I was, or both, to form close relationships with the other members of the board at that time, whose courage, commitment, humor, and love for UMIN was constant and tireless. Well, as I said, I like changes and surprises. Well, good ones anyway, like our new minister. Oh, there it is. No pressure, Dave. I am very grateful for my experiences as a member here. So I wish all of you the richness of experience and the love that UMIN has given to me.
If you were arrested for being a member of this congregation, would there be enough evidence to convict you? You know, depending upon how a particular upcoming election turns out, an investigation into you being a member might not be beyond the realm of possibility, especially here in Georgia. And what would such an investigation entail? Likely there'd be some surveillance, a stakeout. They want to know how many times you actually came to church each month. They might want to know what kind of committees you're working on. They might want to know what you're doing outside the walls of this church on behalf of the congregation. And of course, they'd want to know if you're making a financial commitment. All of these things would be an effort to understand your membership here, how invested you are here. About 20 years ago, the UUA's Commission on Appraisal, now the Commission on Appraisal is an independent task force within the Unitarian Universalist Association that reports on, studies and reports on items of the denomination. So for instance, 20 years ago, they studied and issued a report on membership. What does it mean to be a member of our congregations? And it's about a 100-page thing, and it's actually a good read, actually. I enjoyed reading it. But they come up with six things that they say all members, for flourishing membership. One, the person is worshiping with the congregation. Two, they're pursuing their own spiritual goals. Three, they're joining in the work of the congregation. Four, they're performing service to the wider community on behalf of the church. Five, they're connecting with the larger UUA movement. And six, they're making a pledge commensurate with their commitment to the church. These are great things. These are six things for flourishing membership. I agree with them. There might be some more, but they're generally good. But that's not like why people join the church, to do all six of those things. You don't join a church to do those things. It's not why you join. You might have one of those, one or two of those reasons, but not all six. For instance, I don't think anybody here had money burning a hole in their pocket and feel like, you know, I gotta pledge this to a congregation somewhere. Find me a congregation to pledge to. I don't think that happened. I don't think anyone here joined this church to become a part of the larger UUA movement. And I don't think anybody here joined the church to work on a committee. But I'm going to ask anyway. Did anybody join the church to work on a committee? Good, you're all normal. You're completely normal. There were a few people that I thought might raise their hands. Because I see them at every committee meeting. I surely didn't join this church to become a UU minister. I did not. Or my home church to become a UU minister. It's something that happened. Tony Ann likely didn't join this church, or I don't even know if this was her first church, to become the director of ministry with children and youth. I don't think she did that. And I don't think Robbie Cohn, who's the chair of our membership committee, joined to become chair of the membership committee. Did you? No, but you are. It's something that happened. The more likely story is they joined for maybe one or two reasons, but then they kind of fell in love with the congregation over time. And they felt compelled to do more. Kind of what Daria alluded to earlier about serving on the board. She wanted to do something new, and she felt compelled to give back. For you new members, you are surrounded by people who simply love this congregation. They love it. They love it more than they could have ever imagined when they first walked through the door, however many years ago, and when they first became members. They fell in love more than their intellectual and rational UU selves, because we say we're that. They fell in love more than their intellectual selves could have ever imagined. I love the quotation about love by artist Rann Ortner, and maybe I've said it here before. If I did, I apologize, but I'm going to do it again. He says, "We don't rationalize our way into love. We fall. We don't rationalize our way into the richest of life experiences. We get swept away. We get swept away. We get swept away because membership isn't an event. It's a continuously unfolding experience. Life, to process theologians and process philosophers, think that life is not a destination, a series of events and destinations and here and there and dates, but a continuously unfolding experience. Happiness is not a destination, it's a path of its own. Love, not a destination, a path of its own. Friendship, a path of its own. And membership is the same way. It's a path of its own that might begin with a few characteristics, but it continues to unfold over time. Like I said earlier, you didn't join this congregation because you had money burning a hole in your pocket that you wanted to pledge to a church. For your new members, if you come to the membership meeting or the congregational meeting next month, you're going to find out that we have something called a budget. Yeah. And our budget is, I happen to know it, $289,000. And when we have, as of prior to you joining, we had 116 pledge units, pledge families. And since UUs are very intellectual and good at math, most of us, it doesn't take too long to think that to make that budget, each person on average, each family pledging it would have to pledge $2,491.38. Wow, you don't think you signed up for that, did you? Because that's not why you join. You don't join to give money, because you join for other reasons. And now I said that's an average pledge. That's average. You know, if you're a young adult just out of college and you have a car payment and paying off student loans and you're trying to claw your way into the middle class, $2,491.38 is not something you're going to have lying around. You know? So other people who are maybe more established would have to pick up that slack. We're talking about averages here. But again, $2,491.38, that's shocking, because that's not why you join. And I get that. Now, if you were to ask President Barack Obama how he would define power, do you know what he'd say? He's a smart guy, and he could probably define it a myriad of ways, all depending upon the situation. But I know what his knee-jerk gut response would be to how he defines power. I know that because he was a community organizer in Chicago for the Gamaliel Organization of Interfaith Social Justice Community Organizing. And I volunteered for one for 2 years in Pittsburgh, and there's one in Atlanta as well. And that organization, they preach that power is a positive thing. Power is the ability to act, to exercise your freedom and free will. And in an interfaith social justice community organizing setting, excuse me, is characterized by organized people and organized money. That's what Barack Obama would say. That's his knee-jerk thing. It's organized people and organized money. He was preaching that to the people he was organizing. If you have organized money only, and you're trying to get something done with the powers that be, you're trying to confront them, they might see your money, but they might think if your people aren't organized that your heart might not be in it. You're not willing to stand on the side of love. You're not willing to take a risk if you're not organized from a people standpoint. The flip side, if you organize people only and not organize money, your people will show up. Their heart's in it. They're passionate. But they might not have the resources to remain on the playing field over the long haul. They might not be able to do that. The team might be good, to continue a sports metaphor here. The team might be good. They might be moving down the field to victory, but the clock runs out on them. They just didn't have the time. They didn't have the resources. They didn't have the money. That's how President Barack Obama would define power. The ability to act, and it's characterized by organized people and organized money. While we're on the topic of money, I just got to sneak this in here. Let me ask this question. Of all the religious denominations, where do you think you use rank regarding pledging to their congregations? Now keep in mind that UUs as individuals are the second wealthiest members across all denominations. They're the second wealthiest. So where might we rank in terms of pledging to our congregations? The top third, maybe? Half? Near the bottom? No, you're all wrong. We are dead last. I'm not kidding. And we've been dead last for a very long time. We're really consistent. That's one thing to be proud of. We're consistent in not pledging. I'm sorry, that's just the way it is. It's a little bit embarrassing, and there's two things that trouble me most about it. One is that many of us, myself included, like to decry the 1%. We say the 1% needs to pay their fair share. They need to be doing more. They simply can't take and take while the infrastructure underneath them and everyone else crumbles under their feet. That's a bit sad, because before we decry the 1%, I think we do need to look in the mirror first. The second thing that kind of concerns me about that is that I wonder whether or not this lack of financial commitment bleeds into other commitments that we have as Unitarian Universalists. Are we really willing to commit to even our principles? in our purposes? Are we willing to stand on the side of love? Are we really going to step up to the plate and be there as to what we're willing to stand for, like we did last month in the Social Justice Faith and Action Service? What do you stand for? Are we really going to commit to be there? I don't know the answers to that. And these are questions that all of us as UUs and as members of congregations have to ask ourselves. Because it's frightening, because in addition to a lot of the money going to a small number of people, the 1%, let's say that, we also have a lot of other problems in our cultural landscape. I mean, I don't need to tell you how broken our political landscape is right now. I don't need to tell you that. I don't need to tell you, based upon recent court decisions, not so recent, Citizens United and others, that we have a problem when corporations are viewed as persons, as citizens, and that money, unlimited money, is essentially free speech. I don't need to tell you that, do I? I don't need to tell you that with all the atrocities with gun violence, that we don't seem to be making much progress at gunning guns off our streets. I probably don't need to tell you that we have rampant drug use and drug addiction in our culture. This is the narrative of our culture that's out there right now. And are we powerful enough to address these issues, to address this narrative? I'm not sure. So now you're probably saying, Dave, what does any of this have to do with membership? What does that have to do with membership in this congregation or as Unitarian Universalists? Well, I wish Alex Peach were here today, because something that he said on Facebook or in an email, I forget, he had a quote in there that reminded me of something. And it's a quote from a movie, but actually it's part of a quote, it's from a poem, but it's a quote from a famous movie, perhaps the most famous movie of all time. Of course, you probably know I'm talking about Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory in 1971. In that movie, he's taking a bunch of kind of bratty children through a chocolate factory. And he comes through this room, and he's walking through, and he says, "Oh, wait, the wallpaper in this room is lickable. You can lick the wallpaper. Go ahead." And the kids start doing this. "Lick an orange, it tastes like an orange. Lick a pineapple, it tastes like a pineapple. The strawberries taste like strawberries. The snozzberries taste like snozzberries." And one particularly bratty girl says, "Snozzberries? Who's ever heard of a snozzberry?" And without missing a beat, Willy Wonka grabs her by the cheek and turns her towards him, looks at her, and whispers in words that can cut like a knife. Cut like a knife. "We are the music makers, and we are the dreamers of the dreams. We are the music makers, we are the dreamers of the dreams." Yeah, well, that seems impractical, right? Hogwash, naive. Well, Martin Luther King, if I recall, Martin Luther King had a dream. A dream that he gave his life for. And a good dream it was. But good people, members, new members, Martin Luther King isn't around anymore to dream those dreams for us. That was over a half a century ago. It's time for us to dream a new dream. It's time for us, as members of this congregation and as Unitarian Universalists, to write a new American narrative and not accept the one that's currently being sold to us. Seeking to write a new narrative and dreaming a new dream, as Martin Luther King did, is cause for investigation by the powers that be. He was under investigation by the FBI. Malcolm X, I'm sure, was under investigation by the FBI. And Unitarian Universalists were under investigation by the FBI and certain presidential administrations. In the 1940s, Reverend Stephen Fritchman and the American Unitarian Association were under investigation by the FBI for possibly being communist sympathizers. And in 1971, the publishing arm of the Unitarian Universalist Association, Beacon Press, they were the only publishing house to publish the Pentagon Papers. They were the only one. Pentagon Papers were leaked Pentagon materials that had to do with the lies being told to the American people to sell the Vietnam War. We were the only ones to do that. And the Nixon administration was adamant about investing the Unitarian Universalist Association, who we have in our denomination. And that investigation would have gone further had not the Watergate scandal unraveled the whole administration. We have been investigated. It's not beyond the realm of possibility. I'm proud to be a UU and to be a member of this congregation. And I believe that worth working with others, that together, all of us, those who are here for the first time, those who are members, new members, and those who've been here a long time, all of us can work together to begin to dream a new dream and to rewrite a new narrative. Why not? Why not us? Why not? If not us, who? If not now, when? Let your membership not be defined by the signing of a book or even a ceremony or even coming to this place four times a month at 10:30 to 11:30 each week. Let it be more than that. Because if that's all it is, you're shortchanging yourselves. Let your membership be something more. Let this congregation, this space, one another, Unitarian Universalism, be a vehicle for your own personal spiritual growth. Let it be a vehicle for a more powerful you, a more powerful us. Let it be a vehicle for the creation of a better world. Let it be the vehicle for the writing of a new narrative. Let it be the vehicle for the dreaming of a new dream. Because we are the music makers. We are the dreamers of the dreams. And we are the people we've been waiting for.
Just need to further the work of this.